Hello world and welcome to TYH. My name is Anglo and with me I have Nike.
Hello.
I almost reversed it. I almost said, with me I have Nike. No, with me I have Anglo. I am Nike. I almost said that.
You're losing it, buddy.
Hey, I'm getting dementia. We're that old. We're not young whites anymore.
No, I mean, if you go by our commenters, we're not the young whites anymore. I know we've been around this thing, you know, for a long time, but like, y'all are still older than us.
Yeah, I would say we're still one of the younger, we're on the younger side of things with regard to TRS, certainly.
It's not like you people listening stop getting any older.
Yeah.
You know, you want to hold that against us, but...
And the name was forged in a different time.
Can we get a Norwood check?
Norwood check? What do you mean by that?
Like Norwood scale? You know, how are the hairline of our listeners doing?
Oh, I don't have to worry about that.
Dude, my hairline's still... I'm still Norwood zero.
Yeah, dude, my whole family, we have, like, perfect hair. My grandpa at 82 or whatever, perfect
hair. Yeah, my pop who died with very minimal gray hairs. By and large, he died with a full head of color in his hair, and he wasn't balding either. I mean, you know, these med genes make you exceptionally hairy. So,
yeah, my
keeps hair on your head as well.
The only grandfather that's still alive. He's mostly like Anglo Welsh, and he has a thick head of hair. It's pretty gray, but it's thick. Like, it's there. I don't think he's bald whatsoever. I mean, a little bit, but. And my other grandpa that died a few years ago, he was Swedish, and he had blonde hair until the very end. He died at 80, I think, so. That's what I got going on.
I think, you know, baldness is just a millennial problem.
Yeah, it's a millennial. It's a problem with people who play the Switch too much. It just, you're gonna lose hair. It's just gonna happen, and you're gonna grow a beard, and you're gonna look like Ronnie McNutt.
Oof. I hope you don't look like Ronnie McNutt in his last
stream.
His last appearance. The last we saw of Ronnie McNutt is not a good way to look.
The last content he made.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, does dementia run in your family at all? It kind of does on mine, so I probably will get it.
Sorry, what'd you ask?
Does dementia? Ah, yeah.
No, let's see. I had a great-grandmother suffer from dementia in her last years. She died in her mid-90s, so it's not like it was an early killer. But yeah, I mean, when you're pushing 100, dementia... is hard to avoid. I mean, unless you're like Harry fucking Kissinger and you've got the constant stream of Korean foreskins like being DoorDashed to your house.
DoorDashed.
You're going to have like dementia symptoms as you approach 100.
Yeah, that is true. My great grandmother who had it, she was very, very old. So she was born in 1910. So that she was like, what, 95 when she started getting dementia. So that makes sense given the age. So maybe it's not so prominent in my family as I would think, but
dude, can you imagine how we're going to be like in our 80s and 90s, like how unhidden our power level will be?
Oh yeah, I see that with my grandpa.
If we make
he does
it to
not
that
care
age,
what he says in public, he will say slurs in public and not give a fuck.
I'm gonna cause so many fucking problems, bro. It's not gonna look good. I'm gonna get in a lot of fucking trouble if I haven't already by that point for other things. But, you know, like, us at that age, nobody's gonna be able to take us anywhere, assuming we haven't achieved total Aryan victory by then.
Yeah, dude.
But yeah, barring that, like, we're gonna get in trouble.
I think my grandpa's the most base person in my family. He was ranting against Ukraine in public and...
good.
Doing all these crazy it's just, yeah, he's kind of,
When are you gonna show him our show?
I don't know. Maybe I should.
You should, like, give him an old episode to listen to and not tell him it's you and see if he figures it out.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an honorary old man. Very smart guy. Comes from absolute poverty. but went far in school, got his, you know, master's degree in engineering, which is very good considering the circumstances he came from. He pulled himself up by his bootstraps, Nikkei.
That's like one of the core core features of impoverished ruralite boomers is that they went to college and got an engineering degree, and they graduated with zero debt, and they had a great job for the rest of their lives.
Yep, for the rest of their lives, and that's just,
and they didn't have to be culturally subsumed and assimilated by urbanite paws.
Yeah, I mean, it was a different time. Now we're hundreds and thousands of dollars in debt. I'm not, but
yeah, we're all in fucking like massive
debt,
college debt. And if you become an engineer, you have to live in a shitty city like fucking
San Francisco in a pod.
New York, or you know, yes, exactly. San Francisco, particularly, and you're still paying rent. You don't even have a mortgage, and the whole lifestyle that you live is completely urban degeneracy, because that's all you have around you.
Well, I'm a digital nomad. You can't,
like, get away with it. I think digital nomads are based, actually.
Yeah. I know.
They don't
get
consumed by the.
They're not like I don't have to live in San Francisco. I'll live in like Thailand and code and shit. And yeah, they could be based.
I'm friends with a number of digital nomads. You know, shout out to my boy. I know you're listening. And you know, some of them are traveling the U.S. Others are going around Europe, just living it up in remote Italian villages. And
yeah, you seriously can
making good money just coding as he travels around. You know, oft forgotten corners of Europe.
I mean, it's based, but it the thing is that I think it's going to become like almost a standard maybe in the future, and that, I don't know, there's no sort of stability anymore.
Well, here's the thing. It's true that we don't really have local roots grounding us to physical locales anymore. I mean, let's face it, a lot of us are political migrants, those of us that can afford to be so. We abandon places that we grew up and move elsewhere because we see like just better communities, better demographics, better futures in other locations than the ones we grew up in. And they're like, that's like supersedes the value of the traditional roots that are planted in a place. Because we have to deal with reality, and reality is that tradition is being burnt down around us, and us like going down with the ship won't save it.
Yeah, but it's still generally a lamentable situation.
Oh, it is lamentable. Yeah. Believe me, it is tragic, and I'm not like trying to make excuses to say it isn't. It is tragic. I don't wish this reality on us, but that's what we have to deal with. Like, the alternatives that we have created for ourselves are now digital locations and digital roots that we plant for ourselves and hope to pass on to our kids. Like, this is a different paradigm of...
Oh, yeah, totally.
...of tribalism and nationality that is going to be, like, drawn along digital boundaries and not so much physical boundaries.
Hell yeah, cyber post-punk.
Cyber post society.
Yeah. And you know, us, I guess late millennials, zoomers, we're good with cyber. Didn't Trump call it cyber or something like that? I don't know. And liberals are like, yo, this guy's stupid.
Yeah, whatever.
That like, feels like a century ago.
Like it really fucking mattered.
Yeah, looking
to
back.
To me, cybering was what like people older than me called sexting.
Really?
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, let's cyber, as short for cyber sex.
On their like,
and like everyone.
How did you even do that back in the day?
Everyone in my age group called sexting.
Yeah, I think it still is called that. Because we are you know, by the time
you've
we
gotta
were
riz up the women with your texting game.
Yeah, mostly Snapchat. That's what it was, and probably still is. And Instagram, Facebook.
I don't think I ever used Snapchat to talk to women.
I did.
How'd that work out?
Yeah,
was it fun? I mean, I feel like I don't like the fact that Snapchat, back when I used it, like your message record would delete itself automatically.
Well, that was good if you're doing a certain thing, you know?
Well, I like having a record to reference when I'm talking to women.
Yeah, I don't know.
That way I can go back and see what I've actually said to a particular girl.
Yeah, and like, how can I most aptly form my autistic mask to make it seem like I'm, you know, I know how to talk to girls? I actually don't have autism.
You ever go back and look at your old messages with a woman and like you?
Nope.
You can like map out where things went wrong.
It'd be too painful, maybe.
Oh, it's not too painful for me. I'm immune to the hindsight cringe. For me, it's more like just moments of like thinking back to like, yeah, what happened with that person that I don't talk to anymore? And then I look back at like the conversation record. I'm like, oh, that's why we stopped talking. Yeah. Yeah. I found out like one thing I didn't like about them and it sort of ruined my whole opinion of them. So I just cut it off. Now I remember.
Yeah, the people I've only really cut off, it was mostly just when I got more red-pilled and a while ago. In the ancient days of like 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are still some people from like the before times that will like pop in and out of my messages. And it'll be weird like talking to them, because in the back of my mind I sort of wonder like, I wonder if they've like heard the news. But it turns out like most people just don't know, man.
Most people stupid. Me.
Yeah. Like, so people are, especially normal fags, are so absorbed in their own day-to-day lives that, like, whatever's happening in your life, especially as a person in their periphery, is just completely off their radar that they don't find out.
Yeah, they got to watch the new next Netflix show and play the new Nintendo console. You know, they got to have those. They're not too focused on you. They're living in their San Francisco pod. I was watching a video, I think like a week ago, of like the rent situation in San Francisco, and they have these like group homes, I guess you could call them, where you could rent like a bed, basically like your own little bed pod, and it's like still like over $1,000 per month.
Oh my God!
I think it was something ridiculous like that, and like,
dude,
they interviewed.
Sucks.
They interviewed some of the people that live there, and like one of these guys was like in his 40s or something, and he was like an engineer, so he obviously gets paid good money, but he's living in those circumstances, which is like crazy. I think a lot of people in the future are just gonna, I mean, unless things change, there's gonna be a lot of like homelessness and van life.
Straight up, you're better off living at home with your parents than living like that.
Oh yeah, that's a total, I mean, I've always never been against living with your parents, but like I've been
me neither. I mean, it's very trad and very very med pilled.
Yeah, it's pretty med pilled, and I was just thinking, like, when you go to Italy, they literally stay with their family until like mid-30s, sometimes even later. It's until you like find a wife.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah,
and it's not wrong either, you know. Like,
well, it's not wrong, no, because like we need strong familial bonds, because the family is, you know, a social organism it's like a little entity that is an important part of a nation, you know? And I think us in the Anglosphere should kind of, take a little, we should look at the meds a little more and copy that aspect. But not even that, like, I feel like in Western Europe and Northern Europe, they might move out younger, but I feel like they still live in the same city as their parents and they're all really close. You know, and they could like just walk down the street and they're still, if that's provided they stay in their hometown, but yeah, like my family's scattered all across the fucking country. I have like an uncle and it's so many different states, and it's ridiculous, you know? How can you create a sort of strong bond out of that? It's just, yeah, but I want a van life. No, I'm just kidding.
Dude, I saw the price of like a pre-made sleeper van, and it's the same price as like a decent mortgage in a county worth living in. I think it was might have been a Mercedes that was converted into a sleeper, had like 12,000 miles on it, and they wanted upwards of $215,000 for it.
Jeez.
Like, bro, so the best you're going to get is like a 7-year loan to pay that off. 9, maybe, if you're in one of these like crazy areas where that's a thing. And you're not going to get a good rate on it at all. You won't be able to write off the interest from your taxes like you can on a mortgage. There's like literally no fucking reason to do this. It is one of the stupidest financial decisions I think you could make. Like buying these pre-made sleeper vans. It's insane. It's not even worth it anymore. Like living in a van by the river is now a luxury activity instead of a homeless lifestyle. We have commodified homelessness.
We have. Get all these like hipster and hippie type Zoomers living in their vans and making videos about it. It's just, you know.
We like the future is Wall Street Skid Row.
Yeah. You're going to have like all the bankers like living in their luxury vans outside, you know, in Skid Row, like outside of Wall Street. That's what we're going to get.
Yeah, they're all going to be like fucking NYU and Columbia, Wharton grads, Harvard business grads, and they're all going to be living in fucking vans on Wall Street and, you know, whatever the equivalent is for Chicago, going to their investment banking jobs by day and then like migrating by night.
Yeah, it's all.
And you know what? There's going to be a lot of homeless, like legitimately homeless people robbing them.
Constantly. Yeah. Well, that's the case. Yeah, that's the case with some of these, you know, with these van lifers, especially if you're over there in like San Francisco or something.
I haven't read any stories of van lifers getting carjacked or robbed, but I'm sure it happens constantly. Dude, I've seen these like video, these vlogs of digital nomad chicks going around doing their van life shit, and I'm like, how are you not scared at night? Like, you are in the very back of a Walmart parking lot.
Yeah.
At 3 a.m, in a car that's clearly got like some sort of electricity running because you got to like keep your lights and your temperature control going. Somebody's going to know you're in there, and somebody's going to want to victimize you. Like, why do you put up with this lifestyle?
Well, I don't want to live with my parents because that's immature.
Like, you don't own a gun either. So what are you going to do when somebody wants to take advantage of you?
Yeah, it's crazy. The world is looking pretty bleak in the, you know, the future. It's looking bleak for a lot of normies.
I mean, America's going into like a slow slump and decline into lower and lower standards, man. And like it's the pace at which that decline happens is going to increase, but like it's already pretty fucking bad. Some people's standard of living has gone so down compared to like what we grew up with.
Oh yeah, totally. Like if you want to have an apartment in a, you know, a big city, you're going to have, like, you and your girlfriend are both going to have to work, basically, you know, to pay the rent. Or, you know, to have,
like,
to have livable extra income, you know?
Or if you, like, rent a house to live in, you're going to have to, like, get roommates to also help you with your rent. Like, you can have your GF also work, but, you know, your 2 income won't be enough to afford the monthly rent for this house. And, you know, because you don't have any kids and you can't afford them anyway, you get a roommate and, you know, he and his GF also have to work to afford something. And like, you know, between the 4 of you, now you're in a cramped house, 4 adults, and like, you're still just scraping by, not saving anything for a down payment.
Yeah. I mean, It's all fucked. And, you know, I think people of our generation and younger are just really not too, we're not too happy about capitalism, which is a good thing. So we could, you know, remove these sort of reactionary tendencies within some of the nationalist or, you know, national socialist movement, you know.
You know what I haven't really seen much of this election year is the progs and the suck Dems.
Prog rock?
No, more like prog sucks. because like Bernie Sanders isn't running this time around.
Yeah, who do they got?
Yeah, they've got no one. They've got Chink Wigger, who's an illegitimate candidate who can't actually win, and is just grifting his supporters for campaign donations that will not go to any campaigning.
Yeah, an insect can't hold office, okay?
An insect who is born in another country cannot hold office. If you were donating money to Chink Wigger, kill yourself, first of all, but second of all, stop.
Oh, kill yourself, my dude, Viper. That guy...
the Viper, yeah, we haven't talked about him, have we?
I think that happened in the, you know, the few, like, probably 3 weeks since we last recorded. That, you know, that meme, we all, I wouldn't say we all, people, if you're very, you know, online, you probably know about Viper, the rapper.
Dude, I bought a album from him.
Well... not really surprising, considering how unhinged his music is. He was, I think, caught in Houston. Like, he had basically like an in-house slave or something. You know, he was keeping a girl hostage. Some horrendous, horrible shit. And yeah, it was crazy. But it kind of makes sense considering he's a black dude from, you know, that area, Houston or whatever. I mean, yeah, it's a tragedy, you know, it's not something to laugh at, but it is crazy.
But the fact that it's him is, like, inescapably funny. It's in a very deranged and broken way, it is funny.
It's weird seeing, like, a very niche internet thing, like, turning dark on national news, I guess, you know, or...
Yeah, like, imagine if, like, Jared Fogle, instead of being, like, a popular commercial mascot was like an internet meme, and then the same shit came out about him. It'd be like, oh my god, what the fuck? Okay, well, here's a comparable example. Chris Chan and raping his mom.
Yeah, yeah, which he did.
I will go to court on punishment of defamation for this. He raped his mom.
Make sure you use the right pronouns, though.
He's a fucking sicko. But it, you know, the news about what he did was still kind of funny, despite the fact that it was sick and, like, you know, absolutely abhorrent behavior.
Yeah, I remember Tucker Carlson mentioned it on Fox News. I'm like, my dad is watching Tucker Carlson talk about Chris Chan. This is a weird event in history.
He's really hit above his own weight. In terms of, like, social impact.
Yeah.
You know, I once went down, like, this is years and years and years ago. Probably over 10 years ago. I remember going down this Wikipedia rabbit hole and learning about some, like, serial pedophile murderer in the Soviet Union who was, like, a real autist psychopath. You know, they end up catching him and executing him, but, you know, he didn't really change society around him. He was just like a prolific criminal, and he only gained notoriety, like, after the fact because of his, you know, high number of criminal activities. Chris Chan, on the other hand, he has actually impacted, like, society around him in a measurable way. It's not, like, severe or, like, history-altering, but it's still...
No, it is. It is.
Still measurable.
You know, he's merging dimensions, so this is a big part of history.
Oh, right, I forgot. Yeah, yeah. No, it's actually defining history.
Yeah.
and actually
it's the purpose of history.
It's actually the telos of the
itself. We're in a post-teleological world, admit it, DK.
The dimensional merge is our telos.
Yeah. Just reality is increasingly, you know, hyper real. I mean, it's been like that forever, but it's crazy now. And it's gonna get more crazy.
Well, and it's crazy in like a very personal way.
Like, oh, yeah,
dude. I should be fucking outraged about Viper, and yet I don't feel that outrage that I should, because it's just so.
Yeah, because we've mean him
hard to
he's
digest.
Been a meme for like 10 years.
Right. I only know him as a funny meme, and I just laugh at the monkey shines that he puts on. and that's all I can really associate with him when I think about it. Like when he put out a song like the same day, like I caused the January 6th riot. Yeah. Like that shit was fucking funny.
Yeah, he's the Seth Putnam of internet rap. That's the
guy. I mean, he's just like so timely and like just coming out with shitty, stupid rap music that's not good. Only because like he's trying to capitalize off the relevancy of current events, and he's like got some connection and awareness of meme culture, so he tries to use that to his advantage as well.
Well, but, I don't like, think it's I don't think it was
like,
him.
The whole time he had like a woman trapped in his fucking garage.
Yeah, he wasn't the one actually running that YouTube channel. I think it was like one of some internet like Zoomer or one of our people, you know, that was very meme aware. Sort of.
Oh, really?
I think so. Yeah, it wasn't him running that channel.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I think it was mentioned.
Had me fooled. I thought it was just him.
No, I mean that would be crazy if he was that like aware of meme culture, but I think he was too schizo and like out of it to really keep track of meme culture.
Dude, imagine being the guy who made money off of like forcing fresh Viper memes, only to find out that he's just a
horrendous person, you know?
Yeah,
doing incomprehensible things that just like are, you know, crazy to think about.
It's like also, the man belongs in jail for the rest of his life.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And yet, you know, I can't even see that outcome occurring. Like, he's probably not gonna see a prison. He's probably gonna go to jail or like a mental institution instead of prison.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, he is not fit to stand trial because he's just an insane.
Oh yeah, he's insane. He's literal crackhead. You know, like
as much as he is crazy, he's also retarded.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just been a lot of things, especially since like 2015 and 16, just like seeing a lot of our niche things blowing up on mainstream news, like when the whole Charlottesville thing happened and all that stuff. And
I mean, you want to talk about fucking Chris Chan? Charlottesville is his hometown.
It is. Yeah. That's a good. That's the real Charlottesville incident. Like, come on. Yeah, that was like a weird turning point. Like, just oh wow. Like
Richard Spencer's saying that he's going to come to Charlottesville 1,000 fucking times if he has to. It's like, no, literally Chris Chan.
Yeah,
he goes out in Charlottesville public 1,000 fucking times. He literally does. The only thing that stopped him was going to jail.
Yeah, with his crapped boxers or whatever he said. He says he walks around with crapped. Sometimes he walks around with crapped briefs.
Ew. That's disgusting.
It's just disgusting.
Dude, the man's like a walking troglodyte.
Yeah, another thing that kind of reminds me of is just seeing the weird niche things on national news. Like seeing when I saw Ariel Pink being interviewed by Tucker Carlson, and even weirder, mold bug on Tucker Carlson. And my dad's watching it. Like, what the heck?
Oh my God, yeah. Tucker Carlson's been a conduit for like things confined to the internet.
Yeah.
To reach the public.
Yeah, it's like, if you would have told me 10 years ago that Ariel Pink is going to be interviewed by Tucker Carlson, or like on Fox News, I would have like been so incredulous. Like, what do you mean? you know? But and Molbug too, it's like, I think you interviewed him, didn't you? Like around that time?
Yeah.
It's like, well, oh,
it's a bit before that, but still.
He was talking to Nike a few months ago, and now he's on the news, and my dad's watching it. My dad's like, what the fuck is this guy saying?
How many years until, like, CantBot is going to be on TV?
Oh, God.
It's going to happen, probably. I don't know. Is he still alive?
I have no idea, because I haven't really been engaging with X, which sounds like a porn site. I mean, I think that's been said many times, but it looks like it, too, the logo. It's just... But I'm not really involved in the Twitter sphere so much anymore. I don't know if he's still around. I really don't know.
It looks like the last podcast he uploaded was back in March.
Okay. 23?
Yeah. So it looks like he has stopped posting.
I know that Red Scare is still going on, and they're going to have, like, a debate with, like, Moldbug and Richard Hod... How do you say his last name?
Hanania.
What is it like?
Like more like Hanania, my interests.
Hanania. He's an Israel shill that is actually he's an actual Palestinian.
Yeah, he's got an Arabic last name.
He's a Palestinian, Hanania. Legit from Palestine. He's of Palestinian descent, and yeah, I think there was like some freaking there's a debate. I don't know if it already happened or not. I saw it a few weeks ago between Richard Hanania and Moldbug about, like, what's better, democracy or monarchy? It's like, oh, and it's like, and the moderators are, it's like one of the, it's either Dasha or Anna, one of the Red Scare girls. I'm like, that sounds like something I do not want to go to.
Are they still doing the podcast together or has Red Scare changed members?
It's probably still doing the same thing. I feel like I really don't know. I don't have a Red Scare listening GF right now to ask.
Yeah, thank God I don't either. Amen to that, brother.
I did at one point, but
we're leaving Red Scare fans back in 2017, 2018. You know, post 2020, if you're still dating a Red Scare fan, bro, you gotta fix her. Like you dated her and you started dating her, promising you'd fix her, and you just let that go for too long. It's time to make good on that. I can fix her part.
Yeah, that whole sphere is just in, you know, BAP, Red Scare. All I don't know, all that stuff is not really my cup of tea. But
Red Scare staying together longer than Cumtown. That's a
yeah.
That's an interesting benchmark.
The interesting thing too is just like seeing Cumtown, like with the Stavros guy getting like mainstream kind of recognition.
Dude, I see him all over YouTube now.
Yeah, because on
he's
the
doing
shorts.
His like he's doing his comedy tour.
Yeah, being interviewed by like Theo Von, and like
like multiple appearances on Joe Rogan.
Yeah, and I think he has a Netflix thing.
Does he really?
I think so.
Wow.
I mean, I've never really been a big fan of him. I thought he was kind of annoying and just laughs too much. Nick Mullen he makes me laugh more than Stavros. But
I think the both of them are very funny, especially when they would gang up on Adam.
Yeah.
I saw a very funny episode of the Adam Friedland show recently, where Nick Mullen was on, and they were talking about the Jewish tunnels.
Huh. I actually haven't watched a full episode of that, but I know they had like the saxophone guy, the guy that was
or like the trumpet guy,
or trumpet guy, whatever.
Yeah, the fucking when you type in the word angry Jew into YouTube, you will still get him as the first result.
And then I think they interviewed Norman Finkelstein.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Or Finkelstein.
Yeah, he's one of the ones who likes to criticize Israel from time to time.
Yeah. Anyone interesting? Anyone else? I don't know. I don't really... Yeah, it's interesting, I guess, but I don't really watch his stuff.
Well, in terms of, like, if we want to talk our like, podcast content review, I was quite remiss to listen to the... What was it? Myth of the 20th Century Year in Review, and Titus and Borzoi were not on the episode.
Hmm.
I mean, they made for great guests each year, just to come together and talk about the year that was, and stretch the show out to like 4 or 5 hours long. And I missed that. Those were some great episodes, just to like, because they were always so thorough, going month by month, talking about events that happened, and it made for like a great historical documentation of like things that were relevant,
yeah,
in our lives and as we lived them, and like 2023, man, we had so much happen, so much has gone on, like. Big world events keep just fucking happening, right?
Yeah.
Like, after, like, one after another. This is, like, the most, you know, history is back baby year that we can really remember. And that's, like, even after coronavirus lockdown. You know, I know we said it before, but, like, Fukuyama, wrong as fuck. Like,
Fukuyamaka.
Perpetually wronger than he was the previous year. He keeps getting more wrong as time goes on.
Yeah, I have a few of his books I got pretty cheap. I'll probably eventually read them.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, they were 50 cents.
What's he going to say in there that is still valid?
It's, you know, it's always interesting to read other people's perspectives so you know it, and if you wanted to critique it, you know.
The only time I will read Fukuyama is when a professor tells me I have to for class.
I never had to, but yeah.
A lot of people will still criticize Huntington for the Clash of Civilizations and say, well, it's just supposed to be a Jewish like vision of the future, but it's like, is that inaccurate, though? I mean, constantly the United States and the West collectively are clashing against the Islamic world and the Russian Orthodox world. And that's like what he was saying would happen. And it's very true. You even down to like the India versus China stuff. That's pretty true. I think BRICS is trying to undo a lot of that. But by and large, like the central idea of, you know, Zog fighting the Islamic world is accurate. And it still is. I mean, we are still funding the genocide of Palestinians to this day, and we're, like, about to start World War III over fucking Yemen.
Yeah, there is a lot going on. What's the death toll again? You told me it before the show, and it was staggering.
We're over 25,000 dead Gazans.
Ugh. Yeah, it's a general shift in public opinion, too, I've noticed, is just people are not, like, anti-Israel sentiment is not, like, so... or anti-Zionist, anti-Israel sentiment is not so, it's not relegated to just like the so-called extreme segments of the population. I don't know.
I mean, we're still at the point where the election is going to come down to, Democrat Zionist versus Republican yeah. Zionist. So we're not like so far away from that, to where like the anti-Israeli voice is being heard. And
yeah, received. No, it's not. It's not going to be heard, but...
What
I mean is that, like, anything you see on, like, YouTube, like, the comments, there's going to be a lot of people just saying something about Israel, and, I don't know. Especially the younger people.
Yeah. We've had such, like, an interesting growth of different subcultures that are breaking into the mainstream. One thing that's, like, really come into its own is the, mixed martial arts community and their influence on the public.
Oh yeah, they
like UFC fighters are like very heavily right wing, and a lot of them in an anti-Israel direction. Like people going on podcasts like Rogan and Theo Von and calling out the Jews for millions of people to hear. And you know, the thing about the Jewish tunnel shit and all the attention that got, it's like, we can't not give ourselves some credit for that. I mean, we've been forcing this into the zeitgeist for years, man. The public
we've been toiling.
The public attention given to the Jewish tunnel shit would not happen if we weren't part of this force of history pushing the Jewish question back into public life. We fucking have done that. And, you know, like people will be eternal naysayers and say, like, oh, what have you really done? But, like, you can't subtract all of our influence. Like, I'm not taking singular credit at all.
Mike, he's the one guy, it was because of him.
I'm being very explicit about our collective impact on society. By being this voice on the internet, like, these people who have IRL, like, face fag influence in, you know, uncancelable, if you want to put it that way, normie-facing spheres, what we say is getting to them, and because they don't have the same, like, career risks or, like, life risks that everyone else suffers, they can just say whatever the fuck they want, and it gets put in front of a huge audience. Millions of people do. Millions are hearing this Jew-critical message being said. And, you know, not everyone is going to agree with it because of their brainwashing. But, like, it's they're being exposed to it in a way they never have before. And, you know, we have actually, like, made real progress on this. Like, whether we've done it in a way that's consistently measurable along the way is like debatable and maybe epistemologically impossible. But what we can see is like there's something different about what people talk about today in normie spheres that was not true years ago when we first started like talking about the JQ online.
Yeah, it really did kind of start with us. One of the linchpins was I mean, there's never one singular linchpin. It's a very complex thing, you know, but to use that figure of speech, one of them, you know, was like the parentheses, a triple parentheses.
Right.
Which is like literally Meraki's creation.
There's like been a pipeline from 4chan to YouTube and Twitter that has just been, you know, we can't reasonably measure it, but we inherently know that the impact has been there, and we can see the results of it manifest today, and I think it's evidence enough that we need to keep doing what we're doing, even if it's not like the same IRL organizing and message spreading that other people are doing. Like, just having that bedrock of anons on the internet discussing the JQ is so important, and it's going to perpetuate the dismantling of, you know, this mythic ineffable status Jews have in our society.
Yeah, we are working, you know, towards something, and I do think our work has effect. All of us who take part of it, you know, we're a part of a movement revolting against international Zionism.
And it's fucking working. You know, just keep praying for Palestine, guys. You know, it's not like you can legally send funds to Hamas, and I would never advocate
doing that. Yeah, please don't do that.
But I will advocate praying for the heroic people defending their families from Zionist terror.
Yeah, the world is you know, history is happening right now. You know, we're not, the events now are so just important, and so it's crazy, all the stuff that we experience, that we're experiencing right now. Yeah. But you think we should go to the comments?
I would love nothing more.
All right, so to ease your mind, guys, we're going to go turn to the comments from the last episode, which was TYH 122, and this episode's actually 123, so that's an achievement right there.
On digits.
But we're going to start with 1589. He comments, "My favorite Call of Duty games were the ones with wall running, jetpacks, etc. It added a lot of more dimension and variants to what strategy you had to use. But then everyone kept saying, I want the old COD back. And that's what it's been for the past 7 years. The same game repackaged and sold over and over again with nothing different or new.
Nah, bro. I don't want these fucking wall running in jetpacks. Go play Valorant, fag.
Oh!
No offense, buddy, but...
I like the older version of
literally
product.
Literally nobody asked for that shit. I think you're one of the rare people who appreciated that new addition to, like, the gameplay, but, like, I saw that shit and I'm like, I'm never gonna play that. That sounds awful.
Yeah, I mean, also... Yeah, I don't know. I don't really play Call of Duty anymore, so... Games are... I really don't know what's going on there. I think they have Call of Duty Warzone or something like that. Is that, like, a free-to-play game? Been hearing about that. It might be old, I don't know.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, and so we're gonna go to Endy here. He's also talking about video games. BG3 is legitimately a really good game. Yeah, there is some gay shit, but it's not forced on you and doesn't moralize it either. Basically, same-sex romances are possible, but you won't have to deal with gay shit unless you choose romance a guy. You choose to romance a guy, maybe? There is also a tranny late game that's a necromancer, lol, and you can kill them without reprimand or losing any gameplay. Unlike fucking Bethesda right. These days, everyone right. Can die. Yeah, what's BG3? Battlegrounds?
Baldur's Gate.
Oh. Yeah, I really don't... I don't know shit about video games.
Dude, have you heard about Pal World?
What? Powell Peralta World? What?
Pal World. It's this new game that's basically Pokemon with guns.
Whoa! Epic!
It actually looks unironically good. I think I'm gonna get it.
Is it on the Switch?
Not yet. It's actually still early access, but it's already sold a million copies. It's also broken the record for most concurrent gameplay on Steam. Beating out Elden Ring.
No, that's what I call epic.
It's like a very it feels like an indie game. I think it's an indie developer, you know, definitely not comparable to anything else, like in terms of studio size, but yeah, they seem to be doing really well for themselves, and they've, for an early access game, they've gotten a lot of revenue, you know, I think they're pushing like 90 million in revenue.
Damn, cuh!
Yeah, and it's only been out for a few days, like... I think it's only been out for
five real days now. Man, on 55th Street?
Yeah, you're going over my head now.
On Hood? Okay, anyways. That's the Crip Mat guy. Anyways, Little Warrior replies to that comment. I think you're forgetting the whole Gale fiasco where you are hoodwinked into homosexuality, which made people so mad even the paused devs had to patch it. I don't know. Yeah, that comment. The Endy
report. Oh. I haven't heard anything that's gay or paused about Pal World, so that might be...
Powell Peralta World. You just late 70s classic skating, man. That's what it's all about, dude. Fuck yeah.
Try to get out of your rental a place and like actually buy a home, but you know, struggle to stay in the same neighborhood without going broke.
Andy has another comment regarding the Modern Warfare 2 servers. He says... Modern Warfare 2 servers are still up. You can hop in TDM pretty much any weekday on Xbox Live with full matches, etc. Still excellent.
Well, that's good. I probably won't do that.
Yeah, I'm not a big nostalgia guy. Like, the past was the past.
I mean, as much as I'd love to do that, I just don't think I'll make time for it.
Yeah. I've never been a big fan of, like, super nostalgic things. Like, just move on. I don't know. It's just a product. I don't know. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, like, I guess reminiscing, but it was old, it was a long time ago, and I don't know.
You could be like me and just, you know, go into the same grand strategy games that you play over and over and over again, because it's still fun every single time.
Yeah, but that's probably not so much for nostalgia's sake, but just because it's a good game. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
But wacky flailing arm inflatable hates Jews man replies to that comment. Winning over the PC mustards on that front. Servers are still up, but hackers are able to do weird shit to match-made games like force a map change mid-game. Last I looked, Steam discussions even hinted at nasty vulnerabilities they can exploit to fuck with clients too. Too much headache just to take a walk down memory lane for half an hour.
Oh, there's your black pill.
Black pill. Yeah, that, dude, last time I played Modern Warfare 2 in like 2010 or something like that, or 11, it was all hacked then on the console, so I'm surprised that it isn't. I think I actually did a memory lane thing like in 2017, trying to play it again, and the servers were still up on the PlayStation 3, but it was all hacked. So, well. Going on to energy wars. Afro-Venezuelans are hella gross. They look like Sambos or something, or Melungeons.
So true.
I've never met a Melungeon. That's a Virginia thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's like a Virginia, North Carolina thing.
Yeah. Little Warrior says, regarding getting good at video versus learning skills, I get your point now and totally agree. It's why I quit playing MMOs after college. With no more coursework forcing one to learn, gotta dump some of the time wasters and try learning something. By the way, for me, it's Fedora. Fixing breakages is just part of the Linux experience. TM.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy your...
Yeah, that's your that's
Fedora
a good thing.
Hobby. It's not a
it's,
bad
it's, it's called a trilby.
That's not what he means.
And then Slur Machine says, laugh LMAO at the Foucault bit. That was a good bit.
Yeah. Glad you like.
I was cracking up. I couldn't. I was. That was. Then Fluffy.
Dunking on French philosophy is never going to get old.
Yeah. I mean, that just the name post-structuralism and anus, like that goes together. Just post-structural anality. Yeah. Like that. You cannot not. You just got to say it. Fluffy says, better to be the not young whites than the young not whites. True.
So true.
And then mostly peaceful paraglider says, another great episodes of the whites in their prime. That's a good way of putting it. We are in our prime, I guess. The drink.
We're only getting better, man.
We're floating in prime energy drink. Isn't that like a, that's like a zoomer
never
drink.
Tried that shit.
Is that from Jake Paul?
Or I thought it was Logan Paul.
I don't know the difference. Fuck them to Ohio.
Yeah, those Ohio Michelinks.
Tam says Rust players are a different breed.
Yeah, yeah, people who love like shitty games that are boring.
Yeah. Then Agostino Ravenio says, Halas is awesome. Try an Australian band called Taro for something similar. Not the one from Finland. I don't remember talking about that, but...
Well,
we'll
know,
check it out.
If you got like a Taro back patch, you're pretty based. You know, it's a good way to signal without getting caught.
Yeah. Oh, is that... Was Hollis the band you're talking about? Like the funk band or something that you liked?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I remember now. Yeah, but those are the comments. And before we go, I was reading up on some guy that's very interesting. His name is John Mitchell. Have you heard of him, Nikkei?
Only today, because you DM'd me about him. But I want the full lowdown here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to look over some of the highlights of his Wikipedia page. I'm probably going to get a few books on him if I could find any. He seems like a very interesting figure that I did not know about. So I found him because I was researching or just reading up on Thomas Carlyle. I like Thomas Carlyle, and I was just, you know, seeing who he influenced and some of his contemporaries, and one of them was John Mitchell. So John Mitchell was born in 1815 in Ireland, in Ulster. He was an Irish nationalist, but he was also a Southern secessionist. He supported the Confederacy, and he was against Jewish emancipation. So he was based beyond belief. So one thing that's interesting about him, he comes from a Presbyterian family. So he was a Protestant, but he was pro, you know, unification. So even though he was a Protestant, he was a Irish nationalist. And
wow, one good prot.
Yeah. and it says that he got his politics from his father, but one thing that was interesting is some of his congregation were like, they called him Papist Mitchell because he was pro-unification. You know, they were pretty angry at him that he took this, you know, he was against the ascendancy. So he's like a rogue Protestant, I guess. One thing that's also interesting is that he was a non-sectarian regarding Irish nationality.
That's so rare.
Yeah, so like he didn't connect Irish nationalism just with Catholicism. The common unifying thread between all Irish people was the Irish language and Gaelic tradition, you know. So that was one thing, and obviously that makes sense considering like he's Protestant. So like, yeah. So it's like a more holistic idea of nationhood, and I think.
Well, it's like a more racial or
yeah, exactly.
Ethnic view of nationhood,
yeah, which is,
you know,
it's, Irish or Irish, you know, it's like
it's a very realist way of handling matters of ethnicity, and I think, you know, in today's age, like it's kind of where we should be. I understand there are real and meaningful differences along sectarian lines. But
in America, that doesn't really matter. Come like, and maybe, the Tradcaths, like, I don't know. Like,
even in Ireland today,
yeah, you know, not, yeah, especially not being, in Ireland, like,
I mean, it's kind of shitty for us to talk about it without having like an actual Irishman here with us to, you know, maybe counter us if we're overstating it. But
I got a leprechaun in my pocket right here.
Is that a leprechaun in your pocket, or are you just lucky to see me? but, yeah, you know, Ireland is dealing with an existential threat that is based off of, like capitalists, Jews, and brownoids destroying their country.
Yeah, colonizing.
It's not really like the Presbyterian menace trying to hold fealty to the king. It's more like, you know, Rajesh is now your teacher, and he's letting in every fucking packy who wants to come into your country and rape your women, and that's a good thing. That's the conservative position to hold. You know, there are much more radical problems that Ireland is facing that aren't along sectarian lines anymore. They are explicitly racial.
Yeah.
And they are more existentially threatening than the worst of the troubles.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing to think about, you know.
I mean, it sucks because it means things have gotten legitimately worse. The fact that these are the lines we have to fight on now are like manifest evidence that things are worse now than they were before. You know, people aren't like dying due to political strife in the same way that they were back then, but like you're still having
dying from stabbings probably,
and, you know, depoliticized racial murders, and, you know, sexual assaults. It's
still political when you think about it, because they are colonizers, you know, but I know what you mean.
Explicitly political anymore. This is just the nature of these savages that are coming into their country. It's not so much the social side of the human animal, it's the animal side of the human animal. And these animals are fucking making Ireland worse for everybody, regardless of what type of Christian you are.
Yep. Yeah, that's... Because, yeah, that sort of sectarian mindset does not belong in the 21st century, especially in Ireland and here in the States, even. You know?
I mean, it can't be your be-all, end-all, because, like, what are you going to do when, like, you know, Nigerian Lutherans and Nigerian Catholics
are colonizing you.
Yeah. Like, forget it, bro. It's not their religion that's the problem here. It's that they are fucking animals. They are evil people, and they have, like, racial differences that are causing you strife.
Yeah. We need that. our savior is not going to be the Catholic Church or something like that. Maybe your personal salvation, but not the salvation of the nation. I mean, when you see that sort of like the weird phenomenon of like, you know, we've had it for a few years, but the sort of like trad cath almost like nativism, which is like basically a paradox. But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like America's got to be Catholic to survive. It's like, no, dude, just shut up. It doesn't have, it's not as important as it used to be. There's certain, the political struggle is certainly racial now. It's not about, yeah, we got to put our differences aside. Just put them aside. But continuing on to John Mitchell, this is something that was pretty interesting. He was pretty radical. When it came to the famine, he blamed the English, of course, but he also warned landlords that pursuing their tenants for rents would force them to sell their other crops and starve. So he was basically anti-landlord, just kind of based. Like,
I'm gotta see if he was like contemporary to Georgism.
While you do that, kind of related to that, this is directly from Wikipedia. He argued that independence could be pursued only in a popular struggle for the land.
I'm sorry, can you remind me when this gentleman was alive?
In the 1800s, 1840s.
Okay,
when the famine was happening, I guess.
He was pre-Georgist, because Henry George was born in 1839.
Okay, this fellow was born 1815.
So he might have been like a proto-Georgist.
Yeah, and basically he was like advocating for a revolutionary agrarianism. You know, he said that, this is from Wikipedia, agrarian agitation was the cutting edge of a national struggle. Kind of like, it's a very blood and soil type thing right there.
Yeah, I'm liking what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and he was also a big admirer of Thomas Carlyle. If you don't know about Thomas Carlyle, he's probably one of the greatest English writers and one of the most based, or he's actually Scottish, but you know what I mean, writing in the English language. Even though Thomas Carlyle has said things against Ireland and so on, he was still a fan of Thomas Carlyle. And one thing he really took from Thomas Carlyle was his view regarding the black question and the Jewish question. Another thing that's worth noting is that he believed that just because the Irish, you know, were oppressed by the English, that doesn't mean that they have common cause with, you know, Negroes in America. So, you know, the Irish in Ireland, it's a whole different struggle from what's going on, you know, in the American South. So he's basically against that tendency that says, you know, all the downtrodden of the world, we are one. You know, he's really making the Irish struggle is for the Irish people. It's not some sort of universalist phenomenon. You know, it's uniquely Irish. It pertains to the Irish only. And again, to quote Wikipedia directly, you know, I wish I had a book and not just Wikipedia. But when Carlyle drew derogatory comparisons, as other commentators had done, between Irish cottiers and the allegedly indolent descendants of enslaved Afro-Caribbeans, Mitchell's response was not to proclaim himself, quote, the friend of liberty in every clime, class, and color, unquote. Rather, it was to insist on a racial distinction between the Irish and the Negro. He also argued that the Irish cottiers were basically treated worse than the black slaves, putting him in disagreement with many other Irish nationalists. That kind of reminds me of nowadays how like people always talk about the inner city POC and the struggles that they're going through, but white working class has it worse here, you know, now. It's a sort of similar situation.
I mean, when you're talking about America, like, you can make the case that, you know, whether you're black or white, you can make an argument that, like, we both have a fucking shitty situation to deal with. Taking it from a, like, totally hard realist view, like...
Yeah, we all have this situation.
That black people lead in this country are... They fucking suck. And that's mostly their own fault.
Yeah, a lot of it's culture.
You know, it's just racially that they are not meant for this kind of, like, economy, this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's why we can't live with them. And, you know, we're worse off living with them. But to say, like, oh, you know, one race is like living way better conditions than another. It's not really true in America. We are both worse off.
I mean,
living together.
Systemically, they have an advantage over
like
us.
Like whites in America are in a very shitty situation, and the presence of blacks in this country is not helping. It's making it worse.
And those blacks get systemic preference now, you know.
Yeah, to try to make up for it in a misguided, like, liberal attempt to, quote-unquote, equalize the races. It's just doubling down on the inherent problem.
Yeah, it's doubling down on the white working class.
Racial integration. Yeah, it's using the white working class as the scapegoat for blacks and their shitty situation. Because nobody's willing to take on the answer of, like, we can't just live together. We can't fucking do it. We need to stop this whole integrationist project and live completely separate.
Yeah, it just shows you that people can be oppressed at the same time, but there's always going to be a national character to the struggle.
Right. I mean, that's
and racial, you know, national in a true sense, not just in the modern nation state sense, but nation, like common descent. Like there, right. we have common interests in fighting against capitalism and so on, but like that doesn't mean we're one, you know.
No. No, it means that we both recognize the current organization of society is not working for either of us.
Yeah.
And in fact, like, it's even privileging one group over another to the benefit of no one but the Jews.
Yeah, and also it kind of reminds me of Palestine when you have, like, these leftists who say that they're pro-Palestine, but they're not really pro-Palestine. They just view Palestine as a means to, like, achieving, you know, the liberation of all oppressed peoples of the world. But the struggle for Palestine is a struggle for Palestinian identity.
Yeah, no, the Palestinians aren't interested in your third worldist project, bro.
Yeah, they are interested in preserving Palestine and preserving their culture that is under attack. It's not about some sort of grand, like, I don't know, narrative where we're all together, all oppressed peoples, you know. That's like, not how they perceive it.
Palestinians, you know, if and when they achieve their freedom, aren't coming to, like, help you win your communist revolution.
Yeah, and your, like, transgender stuff.
They're not going to come to your fucking, yeah, tranny slam poetry.
Yeah.
militia.
Slam poetry militia. Yeah, and
That's not happening. They want
it's
that
a national struggle, okay? Palestine.
But what they want is just to secure their own lives.
Yeah, for their ethnic group. It's a national struggle. It's not, you know. Yeah.
You want to talk about the international aspect of this conflict? It's not them coming to win communism in the West. It's us coming to, like, win the destruction of Zionism. That's the international struggle here.
Yeah, that's always just got me frustrated with the leftists, and they're it's a fake. You're just using Palestine as a means to an end, but for Palestinians, Palestine is not a means to an end. It's an end in and of itself. That's what they're
so true.
Yeah,
so true.
That's what they're fighting for, you know. So, yeah. But continuing on to John Mitchell, there's just his radicalism is very interesting. I think this is a quote from him or something, or from one of his newspapers. He says that if men of property failed in their allegiance to the national cause, it could yet triumph with the aid of that numerous and respectable class of the community, the men of no property. I think this is directly from him or one of his newspapers. That the Irish people have a distinct and indefeasible right to their country and to all the moral and material wealth and resources thereof as a sovereign state. That the property of the farmers and laborers of Ireland is as sacred as the property of all the noblemen and gentlemen in Ireland, and also immeasurably more valuable. That the custom called tenant right, which prevails partially in the north of Ireland, is a just and salutary custom, both for north and south. That every man in Ireland who shall hereafter pay taxes for the support of the state shall have a just right to an equal voice with every other man in government. That all, quote, legal and constitutional agitation, unquote, in Ireland is a delusion, that every free man and every man who desired to become free ought to have arms and to practice the use of them, that no combination of classes in Ireland is desirable, just, or possible, save on the terms of the rights of the industrious classes being acknowledged and secured. Industrious meaning like working classes. That no good thing can come from the English Parliament or the English government. That was something that he wrote.
Hmm.
Which I found very interesting. You know, it's,
I'd like to know more about his argument for the
tenant,
you know,
tenant rights.
Not having any faith in the
in the landed nobility.
Yeah, I mean,
the Parliament.
Yeah, I agree with that inherently, but I'd like to know like how he specifically backed that argument.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know. That's why I want to read more about him.
Just for like historical sake, because you know I don't exactly know what the conditions of Parliament were at the time and like who the figures were.
Mm-hmm.
And what they believed, what their agendas were, who they were supported by. And I'm sure like that there's a very interesting and
I think he's just
worthwhile narrative.
Well, like if Ireland was still under like English Parliament, like it's by nature that the Irish voice is not going to be heard. It's just gonna be filtered.
Well, right. I mean
I
can understand that on its face. But there are also like probably contextual factors that were like, here's specifically why, you know, they'll never get representation.
Well, I'm going to fast forward a little bit because there was some elections that he was a part of. So actually, just to sort of speed over some of his things or some of his life events, he was charged with treason. Treason felony, and he was sentenced to be, quote, transported beyond the seas for the term of 14 years. He initially settled in Australia, but he eventually made his way over to the U.S. of A. And in the U.S. of A,
he was one of the convicts.
Yeah, he was a convict. And this is interesting. When he got to the U.S. of A., he was pro-Confederate. And this is interesting, too, which this is a direct quote from Wikipedia. Provoked by the nativist hostility they encountered in the United States, Mitchell was to further distance his countrymen from the African American by elevating them within the white race. In 1858, he told an audience in New York that, quote, nearly all the great men which Europe has produced have been Celts. So.
Wow.
So it's like the Irish aren't white bullshit. Like, you had Irish people actually say, no, we are white, you know, which I think is kind of important. Like,
is there like an esoteric history that says Napoleon was Celtic?
I have no idea. There must be. There's esoteric history for everything, man. And he draws an interesting comparison between the South and Ireland. This is directly from Wikipedia. Mitchell drew a parallel between the American South and Ireland. Both were agricultural economies tied to an unjust union. The Union States in England were, quote, the commercial, manufacturing, and money-broking power, greedy, grabbing, griping, and groveling. And he described Abraham Lincoln as, quote, an ignoramus and a bore, not an apostle at all, no grand reformer, not so much an abolitionist, except by accident. A man of very small account in every way.
Wow.
So that's interesting. That's interesting to think about, you know, because the South was agrarian, as was Ireland, and he's bringing in this connection, which is interesting to think about.
Did he like ever see the inherent long-term problems of continued black slavery in the South?
No, I think he was pretty pro-slavery. He viewed it as a natural state that it was like just that blacks were held as slaves, and that I think he said, quote, this is a direct quote from him, that slavery is good in itself. And that Africans are born and bred slaves. So he's always been, I think he never really thought about the potential ramifications of that. He just was pro-slavery.
Took it for granted that they would be in a, like,
state of slavery. I mean, that's something I would disagree with him on, certainly.
Biologically servile position.
Yeah, I mean, slavery was a retarded thing, but and actually did not benefit at all the Southern working class. It was disastrous. Yeah.
I guess it's a shortcoming of where he's looking and not seeing, like, the
but it's, yeah,
class impact of slavery.
But one thing that just his pro-Southern position is interesting because it's showing that, you know, Irish nationalism or Irish identity doesn't have to be this, like, humanitarian, like, liberal thing, you know? We're like, Irish, we're a part of the oppressed peoples of the world, and we have something in common with every oppressed people, be they black slaves, and we're all the same, we're all one. But he's showing that, no, he was one of the prominent Irish nationalists, and he did not believe in that humanitarian retardation, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I don't think many people really did.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, like, a few, like, you know, abolitionists, who genuinely believed in it, but they were far and few between, I think.
Yeah.
I think most
people... I think I'm talking more from the modern perspective, you know, how people can... Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, yeah. Modern-day Irish, like, nationalists.
You hear that constantly. And, yeah, I mean, like, you hear, like, some of these liberal nationalists who... will say that, oh, these, like, formerly colonized...
peoples of the world.
Yeah, are hold common cause with Ireland as somebody, you know, as a country who used to be under, you know, British rule. And there's, like, some sort of inherent commonality between them now because they have this accidental,
yeah,
like, overlap of...
economic conditions, like, or not,
yeah,
economic,
governance conditions,
governmental conditions, I mean,
yeah,
and economic,
it's
pure, too.
It's purely
is an economic aspect, but yeah,
it's purely a coincidence of governance. You know, that's how empires work.
Yeah, exactly. It's not.
It doesn't make you any more similar.
Mean there's a spiritual connection between.
No, it doesn't.
Them.
It really does not.
Yeah.
You don't have the same soul, and, you know, much less culture. Or anything racial in common.
Yeah. Oh, this is actually an interesting thing right here. It talks about how Frederick Douglass visited Ireland and believed that there was a common cause, again, between the Irish and the African-American blacks. And he, in his one of his speeches there, he railed against Mitchell, calling him, quote, a vulgar traitor to liberty. So Frederick Douglass said that in Ireland.
Well, you can fuck off, Frederick.
Yeah. What do you got to do with the Irish struggle, man?
Why don't you mail yourself back to Africa instead?
Yeah.
Instead of, like, mailing yourself to the north, you could have mailed yourself to Africa, and things would have been much better.
Yeah, and this is very, very... This is funny. So, and at the war's end, he you know, moved to New York, and he actually edited the New York Daily News. He was the editor of the New York Daily News, which is still around.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's fucking funny to me. But he continued to be pro-Southern in his writings, and yeah, he was actually arrested because of his pro-Southern sentiments, and he was interned at Fort Monroe, Virginia, where Jefferson Davis and Senator Clement Claiborne Clay were interned. So,
wow.
Yeah, so he was arrested for speaking for free speech, you know, because we live in a free country.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how free speech rights have evolved over time.
Yeah.
You know, thank God we don't have any, like, sort of sedition acts in place anymore. We're just, like, simply disagreeing with American foreign policy will put you in jail. Like, disagreeing with the First World War could get you in prison at one point in this country. And people were imprisoned over it.
Yeah.
You know, and among other conflicts and other foreign interventions that the U.S. was involved with. Like, just disagreeing with that on a personal level, you get treated with, like, the most harshest scrutiny. And you'd be in jail for, like, you know, making a pamphlet that maybe 20 people in your town read.
Yeah. But, yeah, continuing on with his life story, we're nearing kind of the end. Says in 1874 he went back to Ireland and he got an enthusiastic reception, and there was a lot of, like, people in Ireland saying, hey, you should stand for the British Parliament, And he's like, okay, I agree. I'll do it. If there's a vacancy, I'll offer myself as a candidate. Where is this? This is kind of tying into what you were talking about earlier. He kind of wanted to become a candidate because he wanted to, quote, try to discredit and explode the fraudulent pretense of representation in the Parliament of Britain. So basically, he wanted to become a part of the Parliament to show that this is just bullshit. You guys aren't going to do anything, you know? And in fact, this is funny.
Set the tradition of, like, members of Sinn Féin in the British Parliament, like, winning seats and, as a rule, not ever showing up.
Yeah.
That's, like, the easiest job ever.
Yeah. So he was eventually, in a by-election, elected unopposed. But on the motion of Benjamin Disraeli, the House of Commons, by a large majority, declared Mitchell, as a felon, ineligible. So, yeah, even though he was elected, they didn't want to listen to him, and of course they used a pretense, oh, he's a felon, you know, so, like, we can't have this guy in here. So, kind of showing how futile Irish representation is in the English Parliament. But eventually, not long after, he died in his mom's house, or his parents' house. So he's a neat. No, I'm just kidding. And this is also important here because he was a big influence on Patrick Pearse and also Sinn Féin leader Arthur Griffith was adamant that his like anti-humanitarian racial positions distracted nothing from his greatness and that, quote, he severed the case for Irish independence from theories of humanitarianism and universalism. So at one time, I guess Sinn Féin used to be based.
It did used to be based.
Yeah.
But not anymore.
Yeah, that's John Mitchell. Interesting fella. I want to read more on him. I mean, I've never been like a Irish Republican kind of guy. I don't have any Irish ancestry. And most of my ancestors were like some sort of Protestant, you know, and I don't have this thing. But, you know, I you got to look at history and you got to learn. And he had based opinions, whatever.
Yeah, this is
whatever you think regarding, you know, Ulster nationalism, I understand why people are pro-Ulster and so on, or pro-North.
Well, I don't.
I do. I mean, but, like, it's interesting to learn these things, you know, and we live in a different time where those things don't matter so much anymore. What's important is that we are in a struggle that is racial, and it's not about, you know, are you a Protestant or are you a Catholic? So we got to learn from anyone we can, anyone and everyone, you know, who was a nationalist or a fighter for their people, because that's what we got to do. And that's
I
what
agree.
That's
I don't what, think there'll be any. I don't think there's any useless history to study.
Yeah, exactly. Like we had a guy a few years ago on the podcast. He was an English nationalist, but he was very much influenced by Patrick Pearse. You know, so like. You gotta learn from anyone because we live in different times. You know, you can't be like an English nationalist and always raise your nose and look down on the Irish and just like, this is a different time. You know, we gotta, you know, these Irish people were fighting for their nation, whether we agree with some of the aspects here, you know, me as an Englishman, me as an English nationalist, I could admire Patrick Pearse for fighting for his nation, which is what I'm doing as an English nationalist too. So, yeah. Oh, this is very triggering. So what happened in 2020, Nike? That was a big deal around the world.
Mm-hmm. It was your Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think the biggest thing was the George Floyd incident.
Ah, yes. Who could forget?
So, in the whole movement to remove statues, people wanted to remove a statue of John Mitchell in Ireland. And they wanted to rename the site Black Lives Matter Plaza.
Oh, of course they did.
Yeah. To replace the name of John Mitchell Place. Which, you know, because he was a horrible person. He fought for the South. You know, so we people who are not Irish, we're going to tell Irish people to not have statues of
great statesmen.
Of great, not even just statesmen, just like people in our national struggle. You know, like, you have no place to talk. You're not Irish. What the fuck? Shut the fuck up. Ugh.
Now, did this work?
I don't think so. I think they had some roundabout way of just saying, nah, we're not going to do that. I think there's a quote. I'll do a direct quote from the District Council of New Remorne or whatever the fuck. This is a direct quote. They agreed only to, quote, proceed to clarify responsibility for the John Mitchell statue, develop options for an education program, identify the origins of John Mitchell Place, and give considerations as to other potential issues in relation to slavery within the council area, which just sounds like, I don't, just a bunch of bureaucratic talk. I don't really even know what they mean by any of that, to be honest. Just, mm-hmm. I don't know, just bullshit. Yeah, interesting figure, Nikkei. Surprised I haven't heard about him more, to be honest. I mean, I've heard of Patrick Pierce. I know Antelope Hill published some of his writings. That was like one of the first books they published, so it's interesting to know that there was another based Irishman in the Irish nationalist cause, which, again, I used to be, like, very, very pro-loyalist.
I'm glad you've grown and matured.
But I'm not, that, at the same time, not, like, a hardcore Irish nationalist either. I think it's, like, it doesn't matter at this time.
Yeah.
But, like, given my background, I guess, and I was, you know, sympathetic to the Presbyterians and you know, and the Protestants up there and... But, like, we live in a different time, and I gotta, you know, I gotta look at both sides of the issue, you know, and,
There's some nuance.
Yeah, there's nuance. I mean, my goodness, there's nuance in the world. Because, heck, he was a fucking big admirer of Thomas Carlyle, but Thomas Carlyle was against, you know, he was against, like, Irish nationalism. But he still was like, hey, there's nuance in the world. We could be smart. You could disagree, but I could still, like, you know, admire you, you know? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
People don't have that capacity for nuance. I mean, we always talk about that, but, or people, I don't know. People are dumb. I'm dumb. People are even more dumb than me. But, yeah, so I guess that would be, I guess that puts an end to our discussion, because I don't know what else we would talk about after that.
All right, I think that's a good way to cap it off.
Any opinions regarding that, or are you just interesting fella? That's all you want to...
Interesting fella? I mean, I don't know enough about him to give an informed opinion.
Yeah, me neither. I've just read his Wikipedia page.
Little lesson in this figure of history I did not know about before, and
I'm if anyone
to hear more as you continue learning about him.
If any of our listeners know more about him, or maybe some interesting things, or could point to some interesting books, let us know in the comments. Yeah, he was utterly based. He was against, you know, universalism and humanitarianism. I mean, like, how you can't be more based than that. And he was advocating for an Irish nationalism that was racial in character and calling back to the common racial linguistic heritage of the Irish people, you know. So, yeah. Cultural nationalism, racial nationalism, both of those combined to make something beautiful. But, yeah, so I guess we'll put a bookmark here. My name is Anglo, and with me I have Nikkei.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.